Okay, so as Jenna said, we are continuing, or kind of starting, our series Experiencing the Epic of Scripture. Tonight we're talking about creation. And just to give a brief recap, the kind of purpose of this series is to go through the whole biblical story, not kind of necessarily book by book, but kind of episode by episode is what I'm calling it. So kind of hitting the highs and lows, trying to really track what the story is that's written in the Bible and go through the whole kind of process together. There's also reading cards that I've made up that are available on the back table back there that you can be reading along. One chapter per day, 5 days a week, gives you a couple of freebies. And if you want to be kind of reading along with everybody else that's reading as we go through these topics. Okay, so quiz time. Not really quiz. Question. What are we doing here?
Breathing.
Fair enough.
Studying the Bible.
Studying the Bible.
And the greater purpose of life, or right here, immediate?
What are we doing here?
Thank you for that ambiguous question. Happy Pastor's Week, by the way.
Is it Pastor's Week?
Yeah.
What?
We have a week?
Yeah.
I was never told this. That's awesome. How come nobody got me a card?
Usually church only meets once a week anyway.
All right.
Well, I got six more games to do.
Well, there you go. Okay, what are we doing here besides celebrating Pastor's Week? Okay, let's go a little deeper than breathing and let's go existential here, philosophical. What are we doing here?
Glorifying God.
There's no right answer. I'm not looking for something, so no, you're not telling. We're collecting. Wrong, we're not living. Wrong, we are not glorifying God. What else?
We're looking at the big picture of Scripture.
We're looking at the big picture of Scripture, correct. I just said that.
Oh, no, you got the right answer.
That's kind of cheating.
Got that.
What else?
Taking time out of our lives to draw closer to God and the people.
Okay. What are we doing here, like, on earth, like, alive?
We were created.
What's that?
We were created.
We were created, okay.
We are procreating.
Are we? Not at the moment. Okay.
Until Sunday.
Fair enough. Sunday we're talking
about. Very creative.
Okay.
Sinning,
all right. We are doing that. Okay, well, I have a bit of a video clip here that I want to watch. It's been a while since we've done a video clip in Yak, right?
Hey, Laura, can you bring it up?
It's not a movie clip, but it's a TV show clip. I think I've confessed that Rachel and I have recently become, I think the word is obsessed with the TV show Lost. So this is from the first season, and it's from the end of the season, and it's not really a spoiler, but if it's taken you 7 years to watch the first season, then I'm fine spoiling it for you. So, here's, these guys are on an island, and they are asking the question.
Why are we on this island?
What are we doing here? Yes? So, here's their answer.
I've never seen Lost.
Okay, these guys are stranded on an island. Their plane crashed, but it's more than an island. That's about all you need to know.
Whoa.
Do we have volume?
Oh my gosh, I turned it off.
You turned it off? No.
Oh, I did?
Pause.
No, the mixer.
Wait.
Lost is lost.
Is it on yet?
No.
Hello.
No, Jordan
was
on the island.
Hello.
Is that Jordan?
Am I on?
Look like
him. Am I on now?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now?
Better.
Hello? Oh! Okay. We're trying again.
What's going on inside your head, John? I need to know why you believe that thing wasn't good.
Okay, so these guys find themselves trapped on an island, and
how many of you have seen the show?
Only a handful. Okay.
Wow, that's surprising. It's a good show. I recommend it, but it's not necessarily for spiritual life.
So they find themselves trapped on an island, and this island has weird things, including monsters that come out of nowhere and random things that happen. And the question they're all asking is, what are we doing here? Why are we here on this island? And this guy, the bald guy's name is John Locke, he says that we're here for a purpose. Do you really believe all of this is an accident? He says. And he claims that the island brought them there. Kind of personifies the island and gives it this ability to bring people there. Talks about destiny, they talk about fate. And I think this is what people want. I mean, this is a popular idea. We want to have some greater thing, right? We want some purpose, even if it's kind of impersonal or undefined or an island, we want something to be purposeful. We want there to be an answer to the question, what are we doing here? And that's what we're going to look at tonight. And I want to suggest that the Bible begins with the story of creation, not just because it happened first, but because the fundamental answer to the question, why are we here, is the foundation for everything. It kind of lays the groundwork for the whole story the Bible tells, and I think it lays the groundwork for understanding who we are. And I'd like to suggest that there is no more important idea to figuring out who you are and understanding yourself than the idea that you are created by God. I think that's actually the single most important thing to understand about yourself. And everything else flows from that. And we're going to see that a little bit tonight, but I think we're going to see that as we move through this series as well, how creation forms the basis for this whole story. So I'm going to start by reading from Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. So what was there at the beginning?
Waters and Spirit.
Waters, Spirit,
God.
The beginning of this story that's told in the Bible, the beginning of this epic starts with God. Right? First three words in the Hebrew Bible, in the beginning, God. That's what started everything. And that seems like kind of a simple idea, but it's actually one of the most important parts of this story, to understand that this story began not with us, but with God. The story begins with God. Now, how many of you have older brothers and sisters? Okay, I'm the youngest of three. Did you, the ones that have older brothers and sisters, did you have this experience where your brothers and sisters were like reminiscing about family life prior to your existence?
Yeah.
You have this, they're like talking about a vacation, and you go, when was that? And they say, oh, that was before you were around, right? I remember this as a kid, and I remember thinking, that doesn't make sense. Like, what do you mean before I was around? That, how could anything be before I was around? Like, that just, the concept that time and earth and space and my family existed before I existed just was nonsensical to me, right? Because obviously, like, I'm the center of my experience, and so how could anybody have had an experience where I wasn't a part of it? And I think, in some sense, that's kind of the way we all operate. I mean, we only know ourselves. We only know what it's like to be us. And so we go around the world, and you can kind of run into people, and you see people, and you meet them, and you interact with them, but you don't really know, like, their world, even when you really know somebody. And so in some senses, all of our experience is just defined by us. We are the center of our own worlds. We are always there. Everything we experience is us through our experience. And in some ways, that's kind of nice, right? I mean, we kind of like to be the center of attention. We kind of like to be the center of the world. We kind of like to be at the core of everything. But what Genesis starts out by saying is that you are not the beginning of your story. Your story began before you began. Your story began with God. And at first, I think that can be a challenging idea, because we like to be at the center of our stories. We like to think that everything began with us. But I think as you continue to kind of reflect on that, it actually becomes a freeing idea. Because if you're it, if you're the center of your story, then there's an enormous responsibility of kind of maintaining the whole world. I mean, if you're really at the middle of it, then it's your responsibility to keep it going and make sure it happens, and everything has to go through you. And so to kind of realize that you come into something that already is, and that there's someone that brings you into it, is a freeing thing. It takes some of the pressure, some of the burden off who we are. So the important idea at the beginning here is that God created. God existed beforehand. And this is why, kind of earlier in the 20th century, the idea of creation and the biblical account of creation came under so much attack. Because the idea that God created the world is really foundational to understanding this story in the Bible. Now, in my opinion, I think the defense against that attack tried to answer the question of how creation happened, rather than focusing on who created. And I think that got a little sidetracked, because as I understand it, the how isn't as important as the who. And what Genesis is arguing is the fact that God, and not any God, but a particular God, created the world, not focusing so much on the mechanics of that creation. I don't think that's as much a big deal anymore. You know, I don't know about you guys, if you really struggle with creationism versus evolutionism. I work with a lot of college students. That's not at the forefront of a lot of people's questions. I think the challenge today has more to do with kind of this, what we saw in Lost. There's kind of, I think a lot of people believe in something bigger, but it's just that, something bigger, and fate or destiny or an island or some, like, I call it the mega god, you know, like all the gods that anybody ever talks about rolled up into one. Like, there's kind of this nameless creator, this kind of abstract, can't really know it, it's mysterious.
The force,
yeah, exactly. So it's this, it's just this kind of out there thing.
Sort of like in Athens, you know, where there is the altar to the unknown.
Yeah, exactly. I think finding like a true, hardcore, 100% materialist atheist is pretty rare. But there's this kind of nebulous thing that most people... And so the challenge then that Genesis speaks to our culture is that the God who created is a particular God who has a name, whom he reveals to his people. He is the God that is revealed here. He is not kind of this nebulous force or some conglomeration of gods. So the first point here is God begins the story. And for us, what that means is that we are part of the story. We are not the story. The story began before us. It's going to continue after us. And we come into it later. Now we're going to read when we come into it. So we're going to skip ahead. We're going to read Genesis 1, starting in verse 26. And this is where God made people. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground." So God creates, and if you've read the story, he creates trees and he creates water and he creates land and he creates cattle. And then he creates man and woman. And one of the unique things that God does when he creates man and woman is he gives them a purpose. He actually tells them to do something. And he gives them responsibility over other parts of his creation. So this is the second thing that's important for us to grasp about who we are. God began our story, and we have been created with a purpose. God created us with a purpose. And the reason that's important to understand is because purpose gives value, right? If you study economics at all, I remember this in like Economics 101, that the value of something is related to what, how much it's useful to you, right? So, and more purpose gives you more value. So, as an example, you guys all do laundry, right? Yes? Have a little debate. I won't name with whom about how often jeans need to be washed. You can ask me about that later. So if I go to Safeway and I buy a carton of laundry detergent, right? Like a, what do you call it? A bucket? Carton? A box?
Jug.
A jug of laundry detergent. What's that?
Depends on if it's liquid or powder.
That's true. I'm thinking liquid.
Okay.
Jug. A jug of laundry detergent. How much is that?
$16.
Oh,
I thought you meant like, yeah, gallon.
Yeah, gallon, big one, big one.
No, I thought you meant
like 80 washes or something, right? Okay, so $15, right? And it has value because it serves a purpose for me, right? I can wash my clothes with it. Now, let's say I go to the laundromat, and I don't have my jug with me, so I go to the little dispenser, and I buy a packet of one wash laundry detergent. How much is that?
$3.
Okay. So $3, that's 1/5 of the jug for like 1/80 of the liquid or something. So the value has increased. Why?
Because you need that right there.
Because I need it right there, right now.
Because I'm at the laundromat.
I'm at the laundromat. I'm willing to pay $3 for something that I really isn't really worth $3 at Safeway. Because there's more purpose. It's more useful to me. I need it now, immediately. So the value goes up. So the fact that we're created with a purpose gives us value. Now, one of the biggest lies that we are told in our culture, and I think one of the things that stresses us out the most, is the idea that we need to create ourselves. That we need to figure out who we are. That we need to come up with some persona, some image, some person. We need to kind of construct our identity. That it's up to us. And the reason I think that's so stressful is because if I need to create myself, I need to create my own value, right? I'm not valuable to the world unless I create something, if I come up with some persona that gives other people usefulness. So I'm insecure, I'm scared, because I don't know if I'm worth anything. And anything that I might be worth is up to me to construct. I was talking to, maybe it was one of you, I forget who was telling me, maybe it was you, Joel, I don't remember, but somebody's telling me about a coworker of theirs who has a high school senior child, and they're applying for college, and they're like, you know, got 7 million on the SATs, and they're like captain of every team there is, and play 17 instruments, and stuff like that. And this friend was saying that he hired a college admissions counselor, like a private college admissions counselor, to help his son construct his story to sell himself to college, right? And this person was saying, well, like, why do you need to do that? If he gets good grades, he does all this stuff. And he says, it doesn't matter. You need to have a story. You need to have, like, this kind of image that you sell to college nowadays. This is what you need to get into college. And that's kind of terrifying, thinking about it as a parent. But I think it goes beyond just getting into college. I think this is kind of the way we think. And I actually think technology and kind of some of the online opportunities we have to relate to each other reinforces that, because we create our own avatar, we create our own image, we create our own, I choose what photos I upload and what status updates I say, and I kind of manage this identity, this version of myself. I have to create this online thing. It's almost like becoming a brand, right? It's almost like our lives have become brands, and you need to create your own little pithy sayings about what happened this morning when you woke up. And you need to kind of have jingles and whatever it is. Like, there's this pressure to create this thing that's supposed to be you, and yet it may or may not bear a lot of resemblance to who you actually are. And there's all these factors, right? Like, what are other people doing? So I remember when I was in middle school, the big craze in hairstyles was flat tops. You know this? You know, they actually, you know this about flat tops? When they cut them, they actually use like a big comb with a level, but like the bubble thing, so they can like hold it and then make it actually flat. Yeah, I know, right? It's cool. So in middle school, like, I wanted a flat top, but everybody else was getting flat tops, so I couldn't get a flat top because then I'd be like everybody else, because I didn't want to like be part of the crowd, but I thought it was cool, but I couldn't do it. And then like years later, everybody stopped doing it, so then I could do it because then it was my thing, not their thing. And like, this is how we think, right? Like, you have to have your thing, and it's, you have to be like part of other people's things, but not exactly like it, because you need a little bit of distinction. And there's all this stress and turmoil about figuring out who you are and creating this identity. And the reason that's stressful is because you are trying to create your value to the world. You're trying to claim that you're worth something. But this story, this beginning of the story that God's telling, starts with the foundational idea that you have already been created. You don't need to do it yourself. And that is, I think, one of the most freeing things that you can hear, to understand that God created you. Well, the story of creation continues, and it doesn't end up so well. So, man and woman are created. Things are amazing. They're perfect in the truest sense of the word. And then everything falls apart, right? We get to the end of Genesis 3, and we read this, starting in verse 23. So the Lord God banished him, that's Adam, from the Garden of Eden to work the ground from which he had been taken. After he drove the man out, he placed on the east side of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword flashing back and forth to guard the way to the tree of life. So, Adam has been thrown out of the garden. This creation, this createdness, has been broken. I want you to stop for a minute and think back to one of your favorite memories in your life. Like, high points. Just some time that was great. Anybody want to share? It's okay, you don't have to. We all have kind of moments we look back on that where things were good. Vacations or times with friends or some relationship that was really great. And we think back to those things because we value that time. There was kind of something was that was beautiful, and maybe it's not anymore. Maybe even remembering those things comes with a bit of sadness because maybe it's something that was once and is no longer, something that's been lost. There's a song by Paul Simon, an old song called Train in the Distance. And it kind of talks about this longing and this sense of like something coming. The lyrics, one of the lyrics goes like this: the thought that life could be better is woven indelibly into our hearts and our brains. The thought that life could be better is woven indelibly into our hearts and our brains. There's this sense we have that we could be experiencing something more than what we're experiencing now. There's possibilities that aren't realized in our experience. This is why we complain, right? There'd be no point in complaining if we couldn't imagine some state that was better than where we were at. We'd just be where we are, because that's all we would know. And yet, we feel like something is insufficient now. And I want to complain about that because I can imagine it being better. And maybe it has been better in the past. Maybe it used to be better. And so you look back and say that it used to be this way. It's not this way anymore, but it could be again. And there's this deep sense, I think within everybody, Christian, non-Christian, whatever, this deep sense that life could be better than it is. I think you talk to anybody, no matter how great things are for them, and say, can you imagine life being better than it is now? And they say, well, yeah, actually I could. And I think that in itself is one of the strongest apologetics, one of the strongest evidences for the creation story. Because how could we imagine something unless it had existed? Unless there were a state where things were better. And so the fact that there's this longing within us that we are born with, that everybody, everywhere experiences, tells me that this story is true. There was a time, and I think we have this kind of faint memory just as people of this garden that was perfect. And yet we know that it's been broken. We know that something is lost, that the world is not the way it should be. And this sets up the entire story of the Bible. This sets up where everything goes. Things were great. Something happened. Now what? That's the foundation. God starts this story. God created us. But then things were broken. And the question is, now what? Where do we go from here? And this is why we struggle with creating ourselves and feeling like we have to construct our identities, because we're separated from that creation. Something's been broken. Something's been lost. We forget. It's not real to us. It's distant. That's the effect of sin, the effect of being in a broken relationship with God. We forget about the fact that we've been created. And this story is a common one, right? I mean, kind of the idyllic scenario, everything's great, and then something happens, and it's got to be fixed. Think about Lord of the Rings, right? All of the little hobbits happily living their hobbit life in kind of a garden, right? And then big bad Sauron comes in, and things get destroyed. Now what? Evil is here, and there's this quest to rid the world of evil, right? And it falls on the shoulders of a hobbit in this case. But there's a hero that has to bring things back. And if you've read the books or seen the movies, you get to the end of them, and you're back in the Shire where the hobbits live, and things are fixed. What's that?
Creation restored.
Yeah, creation restored. And in some sense, it's even better than it was, right? I mean, these stories are told over and over again. Star Wars is similar. I mean, a lot of our kind of stories that we know are stories of something good that's been shattered. And then it falls on the shoulders of somebody to fix that. And that's where the story goes. That's where this first episode ends, with kind of this hanging hope. It's not very clearly defined. It's not like we know exactly how God is going to solve this problem, but there's these echoes of something's going to happen. That this brokenness, there seems to be some way forward. Next week, we're going to look at the story of Abraham. But just before we get to Abraham, we get to Noah. And Noah is another example of things going terrible. And God having to clean up, destroy the world because things are so bad. The brokenness has so permeated the world that total destruction is necessary. But then, Genesis 9, starting in verse 8, you see this. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth. I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be cut off by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. So, this God who created and who watched his creation become destroyed by the ones, the only ones he gave responsibility over it, he's still there. He's still there in the story. He wipes out the world, but he says, I'm going to establish my covenant with you. And what he's basically saying is, I'm on your side here. I got your back. I'm at work. And so there's this faint glimmer of hope. We don't know what God's going to do. We don't know where it's leading, but there's something to hope for. I've shared with some of you, we have two foster children in our home right now. And when we first received them, we were trying to do something kind of different with schooling for one of them. And so we're having all these conversations with the school district and we submitting things and appealing decisions and all this stuff. And it was like every conversation was just dead end, dead end, dead end. And then on a Friday afternoon, I had a discussion with the superintendent of the district. And he said, essentially he said, I'm going to see what I can do. And it was a positive conversation. And I left that weekend feeling like, this might actually work out. This guy's on my side. Now, maybe he fails, right? Maybe in this case, he's not able to do what I'm asking. But I had hope because he was on my side. I felt that. And even if it hadn't worked out, I would have been more at peace because somebody had gone to bat for me. Somebody was there. And I think that's what the end of this creation episode leaves us with. God's on our side. He's going to do something. He's going to see what he can do. He's making a covenant. And we're left with this hope that maybe something could happen. The whole story, this whole story, is basically about getting back to the garden. Getting back to what we had. Fixing the brokenness. Picking up the pieces. Rebuilding this perfect experience. And now at the end of that creation account, we think it might be possible. We were banished. There's a flaming sword with a cherubim keeping us out, but God might do something. And that's what gets unfolded as we move through. So this really forms the foundation for the whole story of the Bible. It began with God. Not with us. This is God's story that we come into. And we do come into it. God creates us with a purpose. We do not have to create ourselves. It's not up to us. God creates us. But there's brokenness. The world has fallen apart. We have to face that. We feel that. We experience that. And yet, there's hope. We don't know how. We don't know what. But God's on our side. And we get to see that unfold.